a man who had made a great deal of money speculating in the stock market, and that Julian Robertson apparently was interviewed on CNBC on the 24th of May. Now, the reports that appeared on the Internet, and I checked out these reports, and they were all supposedly a report on this interview, and they were really all written by the same person. He was picked up by the multiple sites. And basically it said that Julian Robertson, now in his 80s, a man who has been very successful in investing, had said that he was very concerned the way the market was going, that he thought that the housing bubble was certainly in real trouble, and that as the economy would begin to turn down, that the government would begin to inflate the money and increase more printing money. But if you read the reports out there, why he was saying that most people, 20% of the people, were going to lose their homes, and there was going to be rioting, and there were going to be barbarians in the streets, and 10 years from now the whole economy was going to collapse, and we were going to have to start in all over again. And it was a very, very dramatic report. The only trouble is Julian Robertson didn't say any of those things. I put out the money, it cost me almost $50 to buy the video, but I felt before I said anything or, you know, repeated the story, I wanted to find out what was really said. Julian Robertson said that certainly he was concerned about the housing bubble. He thought that the government would turn on the printing presses and try to print their way out of the problems as the problems grew worse. But there was nothing about barbarians in the street and 20% of the people losing their money and 10 years from now everything being destroyed would have to start all over again. And articles like that on the Internet convinced me that you have to be so careful of your source. And we always try to be careful of our sources and qualify what we say. And certainly the article that we've quoted many times from the Washington Post by Paul Volcker talking about his fear of a financial crisis are valid. We have the article from the Washington Post and quoted in the Wall Street Journal. But this article by Julian Robertson was actually picked up and was, there's just so much false information on the Internet. Ron, have you seen that article? Are you aware of it?
Yeah, in fact, I had cut out an excerpt from Best of La Metropole on that very same subject. So I find what you're saying very interesting.
Well, I think it was interesting because I had to put out $43 to get the video. But I'll tell you what, the most of what's up on the Internet just isn't true.
Did he talk about 25% of today's spending consumption is being kept alive by the housing bubble?
I didn't get him to say that. He said the housing bubble was there and he was concerned about it, but so many of the predictions were things that are attributed to him just aren't so.
Right.
And anyway, we'll be back in just a moment here with our special guest here at Radio Liberty. All right, fine. Well, something, I don't know why the music's not coming on, but we're not going to worry about that. Okay, fine. Well, Ron, give us your view of what's happening right now.
Well, I think last time I was on the air with you, I was saying that we were on the verge of going into the next major wave up in the gold and silver hard money markets, and that the powers to be were pulling out all the stops for the last 12, 14 months to hold this house of cards together and then keep the stock market going and to keep gold and silver suppressed, and that's what they've been doing. But it seems like when everyone's saying that gold and silver should be going down, they just keep creeping up and creeping up and creeping up. Here's gold approaching the old highs of a year ago in April and then also in December. So
no, what is it? Because I haven't had a chance to look at it in a few days.
Gold's right at 440. It got as high as 444 today. So, we're within striking distance of that 850, 855 high of previous. Platinum has gone through $900 an ounce. And silver, in fact, interesting, silver was this morning up 17 cents at one point. And then, lo and behold, 5 minutes later, it was down 3 cents. But it just hung on to that all day long. So you know, this is the time when the powers to be, the bankers, would try to come in and halt the rise in gold and silver to keep it from breaking through those major resistance levels that go back actually over a year.
Well, of course, I think it should be obvious to many of our listeners that all of these markets are manipulated. They are not free and open markets. They've actually shorted more silver than there is in existence or is readily available for trading. You never would do something like that unless, of course, you're manipulating the market. And the government is allowing it, turning a blind eye to obvious, you know, manipulation.
Well, you know, the short position, you're right, has just in the last week or two, has jumped dramatically, which means that what's called the commercial banks, that's the Morgan Chases and the Goldman Sachs of the world, and I'm convinced that their role in this is to suppress the price of gold and silver in particular, and they do that by selling contracts into the futures market, and just in the last week or two, they've increased their short position by well over 150 million ounces. So we're back up into the range where these four or less traders are short the market over in excess of 500 million ounces.
And how much silver is actually available to trade?
Well, the last I checked, there was only about 40 million ounces of silver on the COMEX.
Hold that thought there right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is Ron Brown, and we were just simply talking about the manipulation of the gold and silver markets, and Ron was saying that there's about 500 million ounces of silver that has been shorted, and 40 million ounces that is available for delivery. So if everybody, of course, even people who had 10% of the contracts actually took delivery on it, why the whole thing would collapse. In other words, there isn't that amount of silver available to deliver. Would that be a fair statement?
I would say so, and the point you made is quite clear. You know, what person who was trying to invest for profit would go short 10 times what was available in a market where the price is $1 to $2 or maybe more below its production cost? There could only be one reason why they're doing that, and that is to suppress the price of silver.
So this is obvious market manipulation, but then everything is really being manipulated today, and they've manipulated the price of commodities for many years, you know, for instance, subsidize wheat so to keep the price down, and they subsidize, and basically the major international corporations really control the grain markets throughout the world. We subsidize our farmers. They sell in the world market, and of course people from poorer countries can't possibly compete with this. And so the poor keep getting poorer, and up until recently, while our farmers have been doing quite well, however, down the line, I fear that they're going to withdraw the subsidies and of course, just simply plunge many of our farmers here into poverty. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, they've been putting the farmers into debt for the last 30, 40 years with these easy loans, subsidizing them, but they're doing it through loans. I remember back in the early 80s, I had a client from the Amarillo area came in, and he was telling me the farm had been in his family for 100-something years, but they had gone to planting for 10 straight years, knowing before they ever planted they would lose money, but they borrowed $100,000, which was a lot of money back 20 years ago, 25 years ago, but they would borrow the money and lay the seed, and then that would keep them going. But the farm was getting deeper and deeper and deeper into debt every year. And so he said, we have to plant, because if we ever don't plant, then they call in the loans. So I think the farmers are going to be in deep straits, the ones that have gotten themselves into debt. And of course, it seems like every farmer has to have a $250,000 compound or whatever it costs now. That's what they were costing 10, 15 years ago.
Well, you know, it's so interesting. We talk about this debt bubble. I was reading an article about the housing situation, and basically so many people are buying houses today on interest-only loans, and that's really a pretty good deal. In other words, you can buy a $350,000 house. It's going to cost you, about $1,200 a month, and that's all the interest you have to pay. You're not paying anything on the principal, or you're simply paying on the house, and this has been a pretty good deal for the last 2 years. But about the year 2007, they're going to, of course, renegotiate these loans. There's going to be about $1 trillion in housing loans where they're going to, of course, begin having to pay on the principal and not an interest rate of, 1.5%, but interest rates probably 3, 4, 5%. And then, of course, a lot of people who have these houses are simply going to lose them. And this is the thing. The people are planning, we'll maybe moving in a couple of years. So we're getting really just cheap rent. Unfortunately, with the new bankruptcy laws in many states, you're not going to be able to walk away from your debt obligation. And even if the house goes down in value, you're going to have to still be responsible for it. I was talking to a woman who lived in Japan, or his family is in Japan, and she goes back on regular visits. And she says, the difference between the United States and Japan is here you buy a house and every year it goes up in value. In Japan, you buy a house and every year it falls in value. And, of course, the value of their properties have fallen somewhere between 70, 80, 90%. So these very exorbitant houses that they bought when the market was booming in Japan and it reached, Nikkei had reached 40,000. Everybody said it was going to go to 100,000. And the property in Tokyo alone was worth more than all the property in all of the United States. And eight of the world's largest banks were Japanese banks. A lot of those banks are penny stocks today, and you own property over there, and every year it falls in value. And, of course, the only thing that really is keeping this thing afloat is the American consumer, and as long as he continues borrowing money, as long as he continues buying from the rest of the world, we're using up 80% of the currency of the entire world here in the United States. We're actually having to bring in well over $2 billion every day, borrowing it from foreign countries just to continue doing what we're doing. But this can't go on forever, and the average American has no grasp of what really lies ahead.
Well, what scares me about this real estate bubble, I was listening to Jim Poplava this past weekend and the week before, I believe. Craig, if I'm wrong, Dr. Stan, he was saying that 25% of the housing demand now is made up not of people buying a house or a second house, it's for speculators.
No, I think that a lot of people are speculating, and of course this really works fine as long as the bubble continues expanding, but what happens when that bubble pops and you're stuck with a couple of houses and massive payments to make on them and there's no buyers?
Yeah, see, those speculators will start trying to get out of the market very quickly when it goes against them. If it's not your house to live in, if it's your house that you've bought to live in, you'll scrimp and save and do your best to stay in that house. But if it's just a speculation for you, once that market turns against you, you're going to see those houses hit the market, and I think you're going to see a glut, and that's when, I really believe, when the bubble pops, and I don't know when it's going to pop, I don't think anyone does. It could be next week or it could be 2 years from now. But when that bubble pops, you'll see real estate values drop at least 20% in a matter of a month or so.
Now, what was it that Paul Volcker said? I don't know whether it'll be sooner or later. I don't know whether it'll be a bang or with a whimper. But I believe that there is going to be a crisis, and quite likely a financial crisis. And we do have that talk, if any of you out there would like to see Paul Volcker's words, exactly what he said. Why, you can either go to the Internet and type in Washington Post, April 10th, Paul Volcker, or you can give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. We'll send you a copy of his article, and believe me, it is very, very sobering. Well, now, of course, there's so many things that are going on today. Of course, that the stock market is staying up, but my impression is this is being manipulated as well, because they're playing games with the minds of the American people. And, of course, there is this, we'll call it the plunge protection team, call it what you will, but I know market observers who tell me that, when the market really drops out someday, then just at the very end of the day, in from the Cayman Islands or Bermuda or someplace in the Caribbean, come all of these buy orders from somebody and nobody knows who they are. but everybody really believes, that is the Federal Reserve and certain of the various financial institutions associated with it that are simply rigging the market because they realize if the market started to drop and the American people panicked, why there could be very, very real problems for the economy. Would that be a fair appraisal?
It sure would. In fact, I get the sense that, you know, this debt structure has become so unwieldy, as I've said on the show many times, it's literally become a Ponzi scheme. You must keep it growing so you can continue to fund the deficits. So every time I think we get close to the laws of economics saying we've got to deflate this debt bubble, the people in charge look over the abyss and say, oh my gosh, we can't go there, because they know if this thing ever starts down, then it's just going to feed on itself. And I like to use the GM situation as just a microcosm of what could happen. You know, we've discussed it, I think, in the last two or three weeks. But, you know, here is GM with $300 billion worth of bond indebtedness, $15 billion worth of capitalization, the value of all their stocks out there. They're trying to pay retirement benefits on 460-something thousand people. And I was reading this week that they were planning to lay off 25,000 of their employees, but the person wrote and said that would affect another 175,000 employees outside of GM who corporations that supply GM.
So, well, you know, of course, you know, one of the heads of the union that is negotiating with General Motors, they're trying, of course, to cut back on the health care benefits for the employees at the present time, especially for new employees, and cut the salaries for the new employees and renegotiate their contracts for health care benefits for those who are employed today and for those who have gone into retirement. And one of the heads of the union said, well, if they do that, they're not going to be manufacturing any more cars in this country. And I thought to myself, I'm sure General Motors would just love to have that ultimatum, because they already have their factories over in China. They can build these cars in China. They can bring them here with any tariffs. And, of course, if the union goes out on strike, what is the alternative? Well, in the past, of course, why they had to negotiate. They don't have to negotiate now. And what people really don't understand is what's happened, say, to the United Airlines. People retired from United Airlines who had pensions, secure pensions. They were set for the rest of their life. And now, of course, those pensions maybe pay 50 cents on the dollar, 60 cents on the dollar, 40 cents on the dollar. A lot of the retired people from United Airlines who thought they were so safe and secure are beginning to look for new jobs to supplement their income in their old age. Because you can't depend upon the pension funds because, of course, there is no money. Many of them are underfunded. And right now, of course, the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation is putting out a I think they say they're $23 billion in debt, and they think it'll be, within a few years, up to $71 billion they're going to have to pick up. Bob Chapman suggests closer to $500 billion within a relatively few years, because almost all of the major pension funds are underfunded. And if that market takes a dive, or the value of the stocks and bonds goes down, why, things are even going to be far worse than we suspect. And so, well, we'll be back here in just a moment with our special guest, Ron Brown, and we'll invite your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, Ron, you know, we talk about these things, and I know people probably get tired of hearing that things are bad, but I think that we have to let people know what's happening. We have Thomasville Furniture, beautiful furniture we've had, for almost 30 years since we came back from Africa, and we bought Thomasville Furniture when we moved into our house. I see the Thomasville plants in North Carolina, and other major manufacturers of furniture are simply closing down. They've been there for close to 100 years, but of course they can't compete with the furniture that's coming in from China and from the Orient. And of course, more and more of our computer jobs are moving overseas. They're talking losing another 500,000 computer technician jobs to India within the next year or so. We've already lost over 2,800,000 manufacturing jobs since 2001, according to the Wall Street Journal. And, of course, those are the manufacturing jobs. How many other jobs have we lost? In other words, when those jobs are gone, why the people who are dependent upon those people lose their jobs as well? What are your thoughts?
Well, that's exactly what I was leading to with the GM situation. All of that is deflating the amount of money in circulation in this country. In other words, the money that we need to support this ever-increasing debt structure is deflating, which forces the government to borrow and spend even more. And so the thing is obviously spinning out of control. I mean, the deficits are going to be, what, $600-700 billion this year?
Sounds like pretty close to almost $700 billion. The latest estimate, about $685 billion dollars of deficit.
Not to mention the trade deficit, which is going to be approaching $800 billion this year. So how much longer can foreigners continue to fund our folly? And of course, what we're doing really is forcing them, it's almost like blackmail, it's a game of brinksmanship, because they still need us. They still have too much of their money invested in dollars, plus they still want to trade with the U.S., so all of them are orchestrating their currencies lower versus the dollar, which means they're printing their money and using that money to buy up treasury bonds, which helps to finance our deficit. But as you said earlier, we're consuming 80% of the world's savings, and that just can't go on forever.
Amen. Well, we've got Fred calling in from Philadelphia. Hi, Fred. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan.
Have a question or comment for our guest?
Well, I just wanted to bring up something, if I could. The aggregate corporate debt that is revealed in bankruptcy court. The figure for what's that telecommunications company again? That guy
Global
was just,
Crossing.
No, just today the old man was convicted in Pennsylvania. Company. There's something like a $4 trillion accumulated claim in federal bankruptcy court. Now I know that's as a result of the enormous amount of debt issued. They basically were hoodwinking all the creditors. But if you just look at that figure and combine it on a trend line with all the other amounts in bankruptcy court, that has skyrocketed recently. So you have ethics and the an ethical meltdown, essentially. So it comes out in the figures, but it's also an ethical question.
Hold that thought for just a moment, Fred, as we bring our other stations back on board here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Ron Brown, and we have Fred calling in from Philadelphia. Incidentally, we'll welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And Fred was calling in from Philadelphia talking about the trial that apparently is being heard out somewhere in the Northeast about one of the communications companies. And he said that they had actually pulled a scam with something like $2 trillion.
Four.
How much?
$4 trillion.
In other words, these were claims of its value that really wasn't there.
Yeah, and it's, someone please save me. I can't remember the name of the company. I guess the name is just as virtual as what they are actually worth. But the Regis is the gentleman's name. And, him and his sons, got in trouble. And John Regis is 80 years old, but he's been sentenced to, 15 years in prison.
Well, I think that what they've done, of course, is they've just cheated so many people out of their life savings. People invest in these stocks.
Adelphia, right. That's Adelphia.
Adelphia, there you go.
Okay, fine. Well, of course, but as you say, we have an ethical dilemma, but why should we be surprised when we take God out of our schools and prayer out of our schools and really of course, in courts today, you don't have to swear, so help me God, anymore? Why should we be surprised when we have a moral breakdown, moral meltdown in this society that's turned its back and thumbed its nose at God?
Plus, whenever a nation adopts inflation or a monetary scam is what we have, because it's all based on debt, therefore the whole system becomes a confidence game, and therefore every corporate CEO, especially every a politician becomes a liar because their job is to keep the confidence alive. Even when the news is bad, we've got a pretty picture so it won't create a crisis. So for the last 20, 30 years, I would say almost every corporation, in order to keep up with all the profits and all the euphoria that was going, got into playing these games, which really, as you say, is very unethical.
And of course, we see this with what the government does. As far as Iraq is concerned, we remember the story of Pat Tillman, the football player, gave up a $3 million contract to play football for 1 year to go and serve his country, and was off in Afghanistan, and we were told he died fighting the enemy, you know, fighting them off, you know, standing there fighting off the enemy, and of course, he was really killed by friendly fire from our own troops, but the government lied about it. And the family is furious. He did that to try to whip up patriotic fervor. And the story of Jessica Lynch, of course, the girl who was, in the Iraqi hospital, who was rescued by the Special Forces team. The truth, of course, she fought to the end, you know, firing a rifle, and none of it was true. It was all contrived. In fact, the Iraqi hospital had made arrangements for Jessica's transfer to an American military hospital, and there were no soldiers there. There was no reason for the Special Forces to go in. It was all a scam for the American people. And when the government lies, and when government officials lie, and when the military lies, why should we be surprised when corporate officials lie? We're in real trouble as a nation because we've turned our back on truth. Well, Fred, did you have anything else you wanted to say?
First of all, I appreciate the show, and I just wanted to mention that a lot of people don't know that in 1978, the federal government basically said up is down and down is up because the budget regime they put into place was that if you made a cut in an increase, you could claim a cut. And I don't think people realize the foundation that we have now. We have a completely deceitful foundation, Dr. Stan.
No question at all.
It can't last.
Well, of course, our job is to try to make people understand what's going on, and we've got to get rid of these politicians and get people in there who believe in truth, who are willing to go back, even if it's only for one term, and do what's right. Trouble is, we got so many people back in Washington who aren't dedicated to the right or dedicated to the left. They're just dedicated to staying in Washington and getting all those perks and all those special benefits, like this Congressman Duke Cunningham in Southern California, who sold his house to a military contractor for $1,700,000, and then the contractor turned right around and sold it for $1 million with a $700,000 loss. But of course, Duke Cunningham then was able to buy a $2.5 million mansion. And, of course, then he works on the Armed Forces Committee to get contracts for that contractor, special favorable contracts. And that man is not fit to serve in the United States Congress. And an awful lot of them should be retired, and this is what we've got to do. If you're out there in the audience and you're not concerned, then you get the sort of government that you deserve. But if you are incensed, as I am, then start finding somebody to run or run to yourself and if you're out there and you're not going to run, then you get behind the people who are honest and will do what's right and represent us rather than the special interests. I'm sick and tired of the finest politicians that money could buy. Anything else, Fred?
I think that you made some excellent points, especially when you mentioned Global Crossing and all the other ones, because we are really...
We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Ron Brown, certainly one of our favorite guests. He supports Radio Liberty, but we're always glad to have him on here with us. And we've got Fred. Fred, do you have anything else you wanted to say?
No, I just think you've covered it very well, that's all.
God bless, and thanks so much for calling in. Bye-bye. Okay, that was Fred calling from Philadelphia, and our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And of course, a lot of people say, well, our problem is those nasty Chinese, that they're pegging their currency to our currency, and so they've got an advantage over us. We lower our currency, they lower their currency, we're not getting any more exports. And we raise our currency, they raise their currency. But why should we expect China not to do everything they can to protect their own country? It seems the only country in the world today that seems to be intent upon self-destruction is the United States, that seems to be intent upon shifting its wealth to other countries, and by taking down our tariff barriers, why we invite people to dump their products here on our markets. Why should we be surprised that they're looking after the interests of their people, when, of course, our leaders are not looking after the interests of our people? What are your thoughts on that, Ron?
Well, yeah, I agree with you. You know, at some point, China will have milked us for everything we're worth. We have sent in all of our jobs, all of our plants. Like you're saying, GM will probably shut down over here and start building over there to take advantage of the cheap labor. But, see, our politicians should be here to protect the U.S. and the U.S. economy. And, you know, for years our nation survived on the tariffs from trade coming in, because we were the most powerful nation. People wanted to trade with us, and they were willing to pay a little tariff. But we, through the in the name of free trade, we basically betrayed our own own corporations, because how can we compete with slave labor? There's no way we can do it. And of course, I think we're in the process now of undermining this economic structure we have in America, so the American citizen will have to work for slave wages in the future.
And I think that's what people have to understand, is the leaders of both political parties have no loyalty to America. They're traitors. Their loyalty is this globalist dream, this idea of a one-world government and, of course, a global trade, tearing down the tariff barriers, tearing down the borders between ourselves and Mexico, and ultimately with Central America. Is all part of that program, and they are intentionally impoverishing the American people, but they can't let the American people know that, because they might rise up in righteous indignation, so they say, oh, shucks, we just don't know why this is happening. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and we were simply talking about this globalist dream, this idea of a world government, which has been, of course, the plan of Lucifer since the beginning of time. And yeah, I have to trace this all the way back to Nimrod. And there really are Luciferian organizations. We actually, our latest newsletter quotes from the writings of the Luciferian organizations. Yes, they're there. The Lucius Trust, Share Magazine, Share International, the Terra Center, the new group of world servers. They're all are Luciferian organizations. They have their libraries. They have their newsletters. They put out magazines and books. And they will tell you their goal is one world government under the United Nations. The Lucius Trust is a certified NGO at the United Nations. It has offices in the United States, in New York City. It has them in London, England. I believe it's Bern, Switzerland. They've got fabulous amounts of money, and some of the most powerful people in the world are aligned with the Lucius Trust. And yet most people have never heard of it. Their goal is a one-world government, the destruction of national boundaries, the impoverishment of the American people. They know exactly what they're doing, but they can't let the American people. Now, if you're out there in the listening audience and you agree or disagree, give us a call. 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Our guest this evening is Ron Brown, who does support Radio Liberty. And I'm going to let Ron Brown tell you how you can get in touch with him. He's got some fascinating material. He's written a treatise on what's happening economically. And, well, Ron, why don't you get your telephone number out there?
Sure. Anyone would like some literature from me, just call me at 1-800-595-0561. Or if you'd just like to chat with me about what's going on in the market, just feel free to call.
All right, fine. Give that telephone number once more, because you always give the telephone number twice.
Right, 1-800-595-0561.
All right, fine. Well, you know, of course, what they're doing today is actually printing more and more money to try to keep this whole a ship, which is beginning to flounder, this economic ship, try to keep it afloat. The M3 jump. $23.8 billion here this last month, up to $9.622 trillion. Now, that is all supposedly money that's out there. Of course, there's nothing behind the money. It's all paper entries. But, of course, as long as they keep pouring money into the economy and, of course, make credit readily available and loans readily available, why, of course, you can keep expanding this, but eventually the whole house of cards comes down. For as Aristotle wrote back 200 years before Christ. You know, there's absolutely nothing wrong with fiat money, as long as you have perfect authority and godlike wisdom in kings. There's nothing wrong with fiat money, as long as you have perfect authority and godlike wisdom in kings. And I would like to ask you, who among you in the listening audience honestly believes that we have people in the White House today with godlike wisdom? Because if we did, we would not be in Iraq losing more troops every single day. We would not be there with not enough troops to maintain law and order. We would have gone in and done what was right and brought our troops home instead. Of course, the plan has always been to create such a chaotic situation. Oh, shucks, we're just going to have to stay there. Because we've always intended to have permanent bases in the Middle East. And if you doubt that, you need to read the writings of the group who controls the White House. They're known as the Project for the New American Century. They have a website, newamericancentury.org. That's www.newamericancentury.org. Go to their website, pull down their report on rebuilding America's defenses and read it, and you will find that they were planning long before 9/11, a very fortuitous or fortunate attack, at least from their point of view, because it got us into this war. They were planning on permanent bases in the Middle East. That's what it's really about. But they are not telling the American people the truth, because the American people aren't smart enough to know what these people of superior intelligence know. They know what's best for us, and that's to keep sending our boys over there to die. But after all, we're going to be able to divide that oil up, and that's what it's part of what it's about. The other is drawing us into World War III. The other is impoverishing our people and of course, the carnage that goes along with it. Well, right now we've got Eric calling us from Compton. And again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Hi, Eric. How are you doing?
I'm fine, Doc. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine.
Brown, how are you?
Just fine.
Got a question for you. I would like your opinion on something. I'm up for retirement. I can go and get full retirement even though I'm only 53 years old. I've been on the job 37 years now. Now, I'm not talking about retiring and do nothing. I would, you know, get a second job to supplement my income. But I was just wondering, given the timeline, let's say it's looking like maybe around 207. Dr. Stan, you had another guy on your program last week that was, you know, I had made predictions, and he was looking at about 207. Well, that kind of corresponded with something that I put together myself that looked like when things would begin to crumble real bad right around 207. Would you think that it would be better to be on a job that has a union, or would you be better off when things start to go sour, or would you be in a worse off situation if you were retired?
All right, Ron, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, it would be hard to answer that question without knowing who you're trying to retire from.
In other words, I think, are you retiring from a government job, from a corporate
supermarket,
job?
Supermarket.
May pardon?
Supermarket, Safeway.
Supermarket, okay. So, and of course, do you know where their money is invested? Is their pension fund fully funded? Is it invested in the stock market? Is it invested in bonds? Is it invested in property? Do you have any idea, you know, how solid their pension fund is?
Well, it would be retail clerks is what I have to find out, but I will find out. I don't know, no.
I think you need to know all of those things. I think before Ron could give you a good answer. Would that be fairly good to Ron?
Yeah, plus I would want to know how much money you have in that retirement plan that you could get out now, because if you had substantial amount...
None. Already got it out.
Oh, you already got it out.
Yep.
All right, fine. Well, then I hope you put it into something that's not in monetary increments, but is tied to gold, silver, one way or another, whether it be coins or bars or stocks in gold or silver. But you should be diversified in all of those things. So you really don't have any, you've got your pension money out.
Yeah.
All right. What are your thoughts then, Ron?
Well, in that case, unless you had another job to go to that you were more excited about, I would stick with, sounds like you have good seniority with the company. And you know, if you were having, I know a lot of people that would have to retire from their company to get their 401k out of the system, and there you have to really sit down and say how much is in the system, I mean in the retirement plan, and can I invest it enough to keep going? I remember back in the early 80s, I had a client that came in, and he was working at the post office, and back then I imagine they were making $40,000-$50,000 a year, which was good money in New Mexico. But he retired, because he was fed up with the system, and he thought the whole system was going to collapse, and he wanted to get his retirement money out. Well, here we are 20-something years later. If he didn't invest that money very wisely, then he is in real trouble now, because he gave up a very good job, and I don't think he's had anything close to that job since then.
So maybe you might do well just to stay where you are. I think that's what Ron is saying.
Yeah, you know, what happened was, after the strike, the union decided to cancel the pension plan that they had, so they gave you a choice to either cash out or roll over. Well, I'm thinking, roll over to what? The money's losing value every day.
I think you did a smart thing, but I'm sure that you, I know you listen regularly, so I hope you made some good investments and diversified. Don't put everything in one thing. That's where some people get this idea. Oh, boy, I'm going to put it all in all my eggs in one basket, and watch the basket. And, well, that's not a smart thing to do.
Mr. Brown, one other question. My friend Lewis, this is the Eric from Compton. I don't know if you remember. You
right, I remember.
Last, okay. Did you ever get in touch with Lewis?
Yeah.
Kind of a hard guy to catch. He's very busy.
Right, I talked to him and sent him some information. I haven't talked to him since he got the information, though.
Well, I'm still working on him. He's got a little something he can do something with. I'm still working on him.
Okay, fine. Thanks so much, Eric.
All right, thank
God
you.
God bless. Good night.
Right.
And let's go to Mike calling from Minnesota. And again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
Pretty good. Good evening, Dr. Stan and Mr. Brown. How are you guys doing?
Doing just fine.
I'm enjoying the show very much. I had a question I wanted to run by you guys to see if there's anything wrong with it. Maybe I'm way off base, but, you know, I was wondering, one way to get some more honest people in Washington, as you alluded to earlier, was, you know, is there any way, could we get up a petition and start a movement and try to have all the senators and congressmen participate in vaccine trials? Maybe for Merck or Pfizer,
right,
or Glaxo. How about squalene? How about 10 cc's of squalene right in the arm? You think that would do it?
Well, you would find that they would not be so idealistic. It's fine to pass laws to force other people to have to take, be experimented on, but you have to understand that they have special hospitals and special health plans and special retirement plans for the elite. Politicians don't get Social Security. They set up their own pension fund, and of course they get very well rewarded for their treachery. They have their own medical plan that will be with them as long as they live. And for their families, we have two classes of people. We have the elite and we have the common folks. And if you are a member of Congress and you're there long enough, why, you are simply made for life.
So actually, you think that they would object to vaccine trials?
I think they'd very much object to it.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
God bless. Bye-bye. A little off the subject, but a point well made. And of course, unfortunately, the politicians, and you can so often see that they have special laws that do not apply to themselves. They apply to the rest of us, but not to the members of Congress. So if they really believed in Social Security, they'd have Social Security, not a special fund for themselves guaranteed by the government. If they believed in HMOs, which they're forcing on the American people, they'd have HMOs for the congressmen. They don't. They have the ability either to go to Bethesda Naval Hospital where they get free medical care, or to participate in a medical program that is funded by you. But of course, it involves going to the doctor of their choice. So, unfortunately, we have this elitist system, and until we take the perks away from the people in Washington D.C. and make them live like us common folks, why, nothing much is going to change. Do you have any thoughts on that at all, Ron?
Well, you know, what can you say, Dr. Stan? This we've been complaining about this system for the last 50, 60, 70 years. It's so ingrained in the system now. I'm convinced that the whole medical system, this alliance we had between the insurance companies and the drug companies, driving medical costs up, is really one of the main factors that's bankrupted this nation. When you look at the problem with the corporations who are trying to keep up with these medical expenses and for their employees, they can't do it. And so the whole system is ready to break. Just it's from an overload. It's just expenses are just bankrupt in the system.
And that's one of the biggest problems they have as far as the automotive industry in this country is the healthcare delivery system, because the union demanded first dollar coverage. In other words, you don't have to pay anything to go to the doctor. I believe every patient should have to pay, you know, for maybe the first $500 or $1,000 of their medical bills. And then they will not abuse the system and pay part of their medical costs after that, up to a certain point, and then, you know, maybe have a catastrophe program over and beyond that. But that's not what we have. And when the unions got first dollar coverage for, you know, the people so that they could go to the doctor every time they had a cold or a sniffle or a hangnail, why, they had no reason not to abuse the system, and unfortunately, that's what happened with any socialized system, and every socialized system, even the one in Canada, is beginning to fall apart. The one over in England, they finally had to allow private health care over there, and socialism just doesn't work. It's a sincere, benevolent, idealistic theory, but there's got to be somebody in charge who regulates things. I'll never forget what the professor of orthopedics in Edinburgh told me. He said, you know, he was in charge of the surgery there, and he said, we have two lists, one for elective surgery and one for emergency surgery. He said, now, you know, if you have an emergency, you get in right away. If you're on the elective list, we never get to you unless you are... Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.